Okay, it's 6:01, and I'm going to call the February Administrative Control Board meeting for the Mountain Region Water Special Service District to order at 6:01. Do we have any public input tonight?
We do not.
Okay, thank you. I think we're going into executive session, so we're looking for a motion and a second, I believe, because it's personnel. We're not going to need to record it. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so how will we – is there another call-in number? How will we navigate that?
Yeah, so in the email that I sent out, there was a Google Meet link that we'll just – we'll log off of this one, and then we can just go into the Google Meet.
Perfect.
And I've got it up and running right now.
Perfect. So is there a motion and a second?
Second.
Does anyone need the link? I can put it in the chat.
I didn't hear that.
Or maybe I shouldn't.
No, I don't think you should, Lisa.
Okay. You're right. Sorry.
Do we have the motion? Who made the motion?
I'll make a motion. We go into executive session.
Thank you, Joel. Is there a second?
Second.
That's Tim. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's the three of us here tonight. Here's our quorum. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So, close the Zoom meeting and call into the number?
Yep. If you click on the link in the email.
All right. So, Lisa, do I need to read the determination on electronic meetings?
We had to update it because it only lasts for 30 days, so probably a good idea.
And actually, I think you're going to need to do the whoever let us know who did the motions for exiting executive, and you're going to need to re-enter public. Or I guess just exit executive.
We did exit. We had a motion and a second with Joel made the motion, and Tim gave us the second to come out of executive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion to come back in?
No, I think you're good.
Okay.
Okay, so should we start? Is the tape running?
Yes, you're good.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to note then that we're having this meeting electronically per the determination we issued on February 10th. We can just let the minutes reflect that. And we can go to the consent agenda item 3. Lisa, you want to take us through that?
Are there any comments on the minute?
Should we just go around the room here? Karen, any comments on the minutes?
No comments on the minutes.
Tim? Might be on mute.
I had no comments on the minutes.
Okay, thank you. Joel?
No comments on the minutes.
Okay. How about the check register? Were there – Karen, did you have any comments there?
I had several questions, and it's probably just needing a little more explanation. Like, there's a lease for Century Equipment for $9,900.
Yes, that's a backhoe lease for the year. Okay. We pay up front, so it's one of our backhoes.
Okay, and then we had $5,800 to Aqua Engineering. It just says BPS design.
Booster pump station, they're doing some design work on increasing capacity down at Lost Canyon.
Okay. Azteca, which is an API.
Our CityWorks asset management software. It's an annual. Okay.
And then there was a Carasoft Tech Water Gems 5,000 pipe subscription.
Yeah, it's a surge modeling and associated software annual subscription.
Okay, and the last one was Siemens for well 5 spares.
Those are meters for our pump houses, and then we ordered a couple extra just to have on hand.
Okay. That was all I had.
Thank you for doing that. Tim, do you have any questions on the check register?
Yeah, I had one on page 3. There's a homeowners association dues for $993, and it's just SCCCOA. What is that?
That's our HOA dues for our office here in Silver Creek. That's a quarterly payment.
So the owner doesn't pay that. We pay it as a...
Well, we own...
We are the owner.
We're the owner of the main office, and just Brian's area we rent.
Okay. Then there was something called a interlocal agreement for $40,000, and I was just wondering how many county agencies are in that.
That is just for the legal fees for Dave Thomas to be our legal counsel for the year.
It's actually legal and HR. So
oh, sorry, Lisa.
Dave Warnock stuff too.
But it's just an established amount is agreed to $40,000, and like the Park City Fire District does the same thing. And
yep, we entered into an interlocal agreement with them mm-hmm. back when Dave Thomas started spending some more time with us, and Brian Bellamy as well. And so we've entered into an interlocal agreement, and it's not to exceed, I think, a 3% increase every year. So, you know, we use Dave at more years than others, and David Warnock as well. So it's been beneficial, though, to have that in-house knowledge and not have to go out or hire it.
But this is the result of a written agreement that we have with the county?
Correct.
Okay, so we're just abiding by our agreement. Okay.
Correct. Just an annual payment.
The other thing, too, and this isn't really a disagreement, but the Verizon vehicle tracking, is that something that's in every vehicle?
Yes, except for, it's not in some of the heavy equipment, but it is in the dump trucks and then all the other vehicles.
Yeah, it's not in backhoes or anything.
Okay. And then finally, there was another drug screening. Was that a routine random test?
Yeah.
Yes, just a quarterly.
That's it.
I have a question. Do we, and maybe Lisa, you can answer this or somebody else, but do we see these fees getting lessening in the number and the amount over the next 12 months? Does that make any sense?
Fees are you referring to?
Just in general.
Just inflation costs that we're seeing?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we kind of talked a little bit about this, the general, we're seeing the same kind of inflation for supplies and things that others are seeing. I don't, Brian, are you seeing anything that's outrageous on your end as far as chemicals at the treatment plant or?
Nothing outrageous, but a lot of electrical stuff, some piping type materials are going up, everything's up about 20-30% in a lot of areas.
Let me ask another question. Are we doing a good enough job? And this is no reflection on anybody. I've just had the general question. Are we doing a good enough job in anticipating expenses?
I think we do a pretty good job of budgeting those out for the year and spreading them through the year. And we spend a lot of time trying to make sure we get our expense budget nice and tight, but with some a little bit of room for contingencies. But I think we work hard at it. So
okay, thank you.
You bet.
Tim, did you have any other questions of the register? Tim, did you have any other questions on the check register? You're not muted, but we can't.
Mike, are you asking me if I have more questions?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I've asked all my questions.
Okay.
Sorry.
Joel, anything else there?
No. I'm just really overall concerned about a budget. And this, again, it's no reflection on anyone. It's just asking the question. Obviously we can't anticipate everything because we don't know what's going to happen during the year, from leaks to having to order parts or whatever. But I just have the general question, do we have enough money to cover any of these quote-unquote unexpected events that might occur?
Yeah.
We do set aside quite a bit of money into reserves, Joel, to handle any unexpected repairs and needs for that. So besides it being kind of budgeted, we also build cash reserves to have cash on hand for any need like that.
Okay. Thanks, Chief.
You're welcome.
All right. And so for the purchase order, it looks like we've got some submersible pumps for almost $90,000.
Yeah, so those are two submersible pumps for up at the treatment plant to take the water out of the settling tanks and pump it up to the membranes for treatment. It currently has three pumps in it. Two of them are the original pumps, and we're seeing a lot of wear and tear on those in production. They can't pump as much as they did, and they're 15 to 20 years old now. Then there's a third pump that's actually undersized and couldn't really make up for if those pumps go down. So we just, this was last in December, put together kind of, we need to get this done. So it's under an emergency procurement. We tried to get a second bid, but people were not biting on meeting the specifications. So this is something Scott Morrison actually approved, as you'll see on the PO and the procurement form even before he left. So it's also got a long lead time. We probably won't see these until April. So it was kind of a big concern of Brandt, our treatment plant manager, kind of a single point of failure. If we can't get the water out of the settling tanks up to the treatment membranes, we'd be out of luck. So that's what that PO is about.
Hey, this is Joel. Have Nickerson and Calgon, have those charges gone up quite significantly over the last time we ordered the services?
We can't really. These pumps haven't been ordered for over a decade, so
yeah.
We don't know what the price was 2 years ago, for example. We just know that that's what we can get it for now.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, any other questions on that purchase order? Don't hear any, so Steve, will you send that over to me in the morning and I'll
see that? Yep.
I guess this whole packet. Okay, anything else there on item three, the consent agenda?
Well, there's the other PO that we did add to the agenda. We had not planned on doing this quite as quickly, but we could save a little money on replacing our GAC. the treatment plant. We were already planning to replace two vessels out of the four this year. Park City's also ordering in some new, so they gave us both a little discount if we schedule them together. So that's why that's was added to the agenda after that original agenda was issued, Mike. So I can email that over to you as well.
No, I think I've got it now. So it's kind of an opportunity there.
Yeah, we were going to do it this year anyway. We needed to get new GAC in two of the vessels and also for Jacobs to do some of the measuring on the effectiveness and what the real life of that is. We wanted to start with brand new fresh instead of having, often we just get it recharged, but this is fresh GAC to put in two of the vessels.
Okay. Do we have that budgeted? Is that included in our...
Yeah, we actually have it as a budget item, and also we have a reserve, kind of, Joel, to your earlier question, for a treatment plant where we put money aside each year for membranes and carbon, and so this will just kind of come out of that cash reserve we already have built.
I guess, Steve, I have one other question. For Dickerson and Calgon, and the third one, have we shopped around? Or we just say, oh, well, we'll just, since we need it, we'll pay it.
Nickerson, we tried to shop that around, but couldn't get response from the other vendor to meet the standard we needed. And for the GAC, it's kind of proprietary that works with our system that we're experienced with and stuff like that. So we sole source that. Along with Park City and everybody, if you kind of get into that realm, that's who you're going to buy your carbon from.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think we're ready for a motion on the consent agenda.
I move that we approve the consent agenda for February.
Second. Go ahead, Karen.
Second.
Aaron, all those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Very good. Item four, financial management. Steve, you're still up.
Okay. Everybody see that okay with the revenue and expenses there at the top?
Yes.
Okay. So it's hard to get a real read much just with 1 month into the year, but we'll give you a summary of kind of what's going on. So revenue, we are over budget by about $88,000. Expenses, we're right very near budget, just about $4,000 off. So we're better than budget by about $92,000 during January. We'd expected to lose, you know, $100,000. We only lost $10,000. We always kind of are negative in the early months of the year. In the late months of the year, we make our money in the summer when usage is higher. The reason we're over in revenue, kind of sounds like a familiar tune from last year, is development-related collections. But the big variance in January was from Promontory. They sold 10 lots and generated $52,000 in assessments for us. In January, we only had budgeted $8,200. So they continue to be able to sell lots quite effectively up there, it appears. Impact fees, we were slightly over. We did collect about $70,000 in impact fees, and we had budgeted $50,000 for January. As you recall, our budget for impact fees for this year is increasing over previous years to $1.6 million. So I'm really hoping this number stays pretty close all year. Right. I'll just point out something. We'll see it a little later. If you'll see retail sales and Promontory Water, and basically our water budget was really close. We were right on, which you kind of expect early in the year because usage is pretty consistent usually, so it's much easier to project revenue early in the year and late in the year than during the summer months. Operating expenses, we are doing, again, we are under budget on both categories, both operations and non-OMER. We are a little bit over on interest expense. There was some cost savings related to finishing off the 2012 bond that we had budgeted in 2022, but since we finished paying the bond in December, we're going to roll those back into 2021 to match the timing of the payoff of the bond. But that'll equalize out over the year. We'll still be a little bit over at the end of the year, but this won't continue to grow like that. Cash, we're at 307 days reserves in our operating cash. Let's see, the debt reserves held by the district, Promontory had sold so many lots last year that they didn't really have to make a big payment at the end of the year to us. We were able to just pull out of a reserve to make their portion of the bond payment in December. So that's why that number dropped. That was just basically pulling money out of Promontory to make assessments to make the bond payment. Our debt reserves went up because we're the $298,000 you see there, that's our monthly deposit into the bonds so that we can make the payments throughout the year, and particularly at the end of the year is when the big ones come out. The regionalization reserve was still at $2.8 million. We've taken, with your approval at the end of the last budgeting cycle, we've now taken $800,000 of that and created a separate reserve called drought reserve, which you'll see on February's report. You'll see a regionalization for a little over $2 million and then that drought reserve for about $800,000. So that's kind of where we sit on cash right now. A good position that we're in. Sorry, I've got my video kind of minimized, so if you have any questions, please feel free to speak up.
Hey, Steve. Just a general question. I know you're not through everything, but do you have any concerns on any of these numbers that you see, whether they're assets or liabilities?
No, no concerns. I mean, I think we'll talk about the drought stuff a little bit later and just maybe how we'll be using some of these reserves if when Lisa talks about that a little bit later. But right now, I feel really good about where we're at and the position we've gotten ourselves to, and I think we're well prepared to handle whatever's thrown at us in 2022.
I'm hoping that you and or anybody else get to see in the future. Hopefully that's possible.
Yeah, the magic eight ball doesn't work all the time, does it?
No, it doesn't.
We do our best, but yeah. Growth, we continue at a pretty good clip on growth. We had 14 new connections in January, so above the four-year average of 6 by 8. I have added a new column to this field of what those 14 connections account for in ERC. So you'll see those 14 connections equated to 25.64 ERCs. This is a, so, for example, a 6,000 square foot house is basically two ERCs. So we just had a few bigger houses come on in those connections. A lot of the connections are out of Promontory and Silver Creek, so that's why you'll see that the average per ERC over here in this right column, the 2,758, our ERC is actually 8,579, but with the prepaids and the discounted one for Promontory, because they built so much of their own infrastructure, that's what it's averaging out to be.
So, Steve, how is the ERC calculation made? I mean, you said that if it's a 6,000 square foot house, it's basically two ERCs, but you've got the ERCs accurate to like two decimal points. I mean, how does that work?
It doesn't. Well, because, okay, so a standard house, anything 3,000 square feet and below is considered one ERC. And then there's a formula that calculates it up from 3,000. So, for example, if you're 4,500 square feet, you'd be 1.5 ERCs. If you're 5,000, you might be 1.6 ERCs.
Okay.
And since we're timed in that way, yeah, it gets pretty precise. If a house gets over 8,000 square feet, then they do another calculation based on amount of landscaping or irrigated landscaping they're going to have outside. It's a fairly robust formula that Doug Evans helped build back in the day, and we continue to use just to make sure we're allocating ERCs correctly.
It just seems like the accuracy of two decimal points is suggesting an accuracy that's just not there other than the formula, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't tell us. It is actually quite accurate, so it's really can... For example, if you had a house and you came in and wanted to remodel or do an addition, your ERC might be, you know, 0.33 or whatever. And since you're timesing it by a, you know, a number over 8,000, people want it carried out to the decimal because they rounding too much can change how much they pay quite a bit. So, does that make sense?
Thanks.
You bet.
So how much water does an ERC equal in a year? Mm-hmm. Do we have that? Do we know what that
right is? Now? Our level of service in our impact fee study equates it to half an acre of water.
Okay.
I think that's going to come down with our study this year. I think that's a little high given the usage we saw last year and the type of units that are coming on. But that's what an ERC usually equates to, is half an acre of water.
Don't we use a half an acre foot for planning regardless, and then we use what the actual is for operating?
I'm going to get out of my... I don't know exactly what number Scott always used.
It's 0.5 is what we've had in our... That's what's in the ISSP from 2019. And like Steve mentioned, that's coming down. The model that Scott was using is to predict our growth going forward was 0.44. And I think last year we actually ended up coming in at 0.38.
Correct.
If I'm wrong, someone.
No, that sounds right.
Well, is that a result of conservation efforts or just the atmospherics or what?
I think it was, you know, we saw our usage came down last year, and I think that was a combination of both messaging, as well as we had a rainy end of our summer season. If you remember, August and September were rainy, and people turned off their sprinklers early. So I think, to tell you what was conservation actually and what was atmosphere, I don't know. But it was much smaller coming off the 2020 year, which was one of our highest usage years. And that's where that point, I think, our point four. 4.4, something in that area, but it dropped that significantly in 1 year.
Well, it's an important factor on here, because if we're actually going to 0.4 of an acre foot versus 5, I mean, you've all of a sudden found a 20% growth in source, right?
Yes,
correct.
And it delays the need to build new sources.
So when we come to you to start talking about this ISSP in April is when we're scheduled to start having a work session about it. Those variables and those assumptions we'll be discussing with you, what we're going to use for our projection.
Lisa, what is IFFP?
Oh, sorry. It's our impact fee facility plan. So we come up with our impact fee calculation. So we did one in 2019. And we're updating it in 2022. We're in the process of doing that.
Thank you.
This is your, let me make some comments just so you're aware. You may want to use this information, you may not. But I don't think there's going to be any moratoriums. I see sales for real estate staying just as they are, maybe going up a little bit more. I mean, unless people really start to rebel and say, you know what, I'm not going to spend this type of money, it's ridiculous. But from a sample basis planning commission, I don't see a moratorium, and I see just as much building for the next year. And hopefully you guys should, I mean, that could change. Obviously, that could change. But right now, that's what I see. I know it's early in the year, but I just want to communicate that to you guys.
Yeah, we're seeing similar trends so far this year. Like you say, it's early as we had last year. Jump down to usage really quick. So as I kind of mentioned, our customer used 89 acre feet this January. Last January, they used 89 acre feet. January's getting a little easier to predict. So this will be much more important to watch over the year, but right now, at least January this year matched January last year, which kind of back to the earlier comment means a little bit smaller usage per unit because we do have more units than we did last January. Our little graph, you'll see the little purple dot. Just showing that this January was our highest retail water sales, but just by a little bit. Basically, that was base growth. And then just kind of to highlight, we weren't perfect in each category, but overall we budgeted $615,600 for January for revenue, and we beat that by $115. So as far as water sales, we were right where we thought we'd be. So that's kind of the financial summary for January. Any questions?
No, that all sounds really good.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you. So that was, I don't think we need a motion. There's nothing really there for the board.
No motion there. Let me move on. I guess I forgot. I'm on the agenda still, but real quickly, in your packet, and maybe for sake of time, I think we might be okay to skip this. There's a quarterly requirement that I send a report to the board about our cash. You guys kind of see where our cash is actually each month, but this is just a more formal report showing where our money. So, for example, the Wells Fargo at year end had about $500,000. Most of our money was in the PTIFs. That's where we can make a little bit of interest, and we keep our reserves and our operating reserves so they can earn some interest. Cash did grow quite a bit during 2021, as you probably expected. The biggest growth, I'll say, is in the category called debt reserves held by the district. And that's because of all the impact fees we collected. You'll see that at December 2020, we were at $4.2 million. Now we're at $7.1 million. And that's almost all impact fees that we did collect last year. Let's see. And then we have drawn down the last of the community water money, the $2.6 million. We've reimbursed ourselves for all our expenses. And it left about $250,000, $60,000 left that we're going to pay off a portion of that debt that we're allowed to. So the other one, that climbed quite significantly was other cash. And that's because of all the customers last year, when they pay their impact fee, they also pay a deposit. So that's why our deposit or this other cash category increased significantly in 2021. When they connect with water and it's inspected and everything's good, we give them back their $1,500 they put on deposit. So, but unless there's any specific questions about this report, for sake of time, maybe tonight, we won't go more into depth than that. But any questions on that report that anybody wanted answered?
Yes, I had a question. What's the annexation deposit? It's only $25,000 this year, but I wasn't sure if that was like a new...
Oh, yeah, it is new. That was the money that Pine Meadows put on deposit to cover expenses, the beginning of the expenses for Bowen and Collins to start that study.
Okay.
So we're supposed to take the first invoices and kind of reimburse ourselves out of that, and then they'll just kind of pay as we go after that.
Okay. That was my only question.
Oh, that's good catch, Karen.
Yeah, great.
Thank you. Any other?
What's the requirement that drives this report?
Just one of the state reporting requirements. There's lots of state reporting requirements we kind of have in the back end, just submitting all our expenditures and revenues to the state through their transparency. You've maybe heard some on the news, there's been some grumbling about that and about Graham and things like that. So this is one of the things we have to send to the state so that people could, I guess, look it up if they wanted, much like our budget and things like that.
Special service districts to do this? The state does?
Yes, and other entities, but special service districts we have to.
That's how we fall into it?
Yeah.
Very good. Joel or Tim, anything?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay, as long as I'm on the hit parade, we'll go to, so as Lisa and I were establishing the drought reserve fund, where we wanted to transfer the $800,000 in into a new PTIF account, we realized we had some outdated information on who can make decisions on the PTIF accounts about adding and changing things. So, Mike, I just included this for you to sign down here at the bottom, and then Anna can notarize it. But it just means that Lisa and I both can have access to the PTIF accounts and make any changes that we would need to.
Were both of these, the report and this PTIF signature, were those on that updated agenda?
The PTIF signature should have been in the original agenda as well as the cash report. Those were uploaded at the same time as everything else. Just the one PO came after the fact, I know. But I can email these to you in the morning, Mike, as well.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure I understand that. So on item four, I was only seeing the update on January 22 and the annual cash report. Oh, that's what this is, the semi-annual cash report. Okay. And then the PTIF signature. I don't know, but okay, so that's in the packet, but it's not on the agenda.
It's number five on the agenda, and it needs a motion.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so we're through four. Steve just took us through five. I think we're ready for a motion there. A second, maybe.
Okay, so are we making a motion to establish the $800,000...
No, sorry. You're just making a motion to approve Lisa and I as the authorized users for the PTIF or with the state treasurer's office.
Okay. So I move that we approve Steve and Lisa to be in charge of the PTIF account.
Second.
Aaron, Joel, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. Okay. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Yeah. We're ready for then item six and Chris Braun talking about, looks like we have a parcel here.
Yeah, so this is the same parcel for annexation that we talked about last time that Ian had some questions about. Bring this up. So this again is the piece behind the Discovery subdivision. You guys can all see this, correct?
Yeah.
So this is the piece that was behind Discovery. We had a conversation with Ian. Scott and I did a couple weeks ago. The gentleman was interested in selling the water right associated with the parcel, but it doesn't really benefit the district from a paper standpoint or from a financial standpoint to pursue purchasing the water rights. So Ian was in favor of us moving forward with the annexation. So we are representing this to the board to get a motion to approve this annexation, or not approve, to recommend this annexation for the county council.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Is there any questions on this?
Yeah, I have a question about, is it normal practice of the district that when they annex a property into the district that they don't take the underlying, I mean, would they generally take the underlying water rights if they're delivering water to that parcel?
You mean, does the district take it? Is it
a standard practice?
No, we don't. Typically, we don't even consider that. Most of the time, from a paper standpoint, we have more than enough paper rights, and especially in the East Canyon drainage, which this parcel is, it doesn't. We have more paper than we could ever make wet, so it doesn't make any sense for us. And from a production standpoint, the wells and so forth on these smaller parcels are typically so minor that there's no way that we would ever be able to get them to a production standpoint or be able to generate enough water and get them into the system. So it's not something we generally contemplate.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? I think we're ready for a motion to second, please.
Well, I move that we annex that parcel, what is it, PP38C2, into the district.
Thank you.
Second.
Joel, Tim and Joel. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you, Chris. So, on to item 7. Lisa, do you have some...
Yep, I just have a few items to go over. I have a Pine Meadows update. I guess this is mostly for Joel and Tim. Karen and Mike, Scott Morrison and I, along with Dave Thomas, met with Pine Meadows last week. They're... head of their the Pine Meadows company, Eric Siklevic, I think is his last name, and then one of the operator there, and their attorney, Ted Barnes. And we had a discussion about primarily, you know, the concerns that the district has right now with moving forward on an annexation, the concerns that Pine Meadows has with trying to get, you know, their system secured and in a reliable state for their customers. So we had some, you know, just kind of voiced those concerns, and each, and Karen and Mike jump in here if you have anything else to add. But I think we were able to come to a good resolution and an interim solution to give the district both some breathing room to not have to undertake an annexation. And that what we talked about, Pine Meadows doing an interim wholesale agreement for 5 years, term of 5 years. They were agreeable to that. They had mentioned in an email previously, 10-year period. We thought that was probably too long, but 5 years is something we think we can work with. We discussed using a wholesale rate for them that would be based off of the wholesale rate we charge Summit Water under the master agreement, with the caveat that we would have a different delivery point from Old Ranch Road, which is what we use for Summit Water, versus the Pine Meadows, which would be up at the top of the Stagecoach area. So we'd have to calculate some distribution line in there that would change the calculation slightly for them. They also have a high elevation pumping surcharge, but we think that number would be more reasonable than what they're paying right now at our interruptible source rate, which is 13 HEPs on top of that. So it's pretty expensive water.
Yeah, I think it's 16 and a quarter with the high elevation pumping.
Yeah, it's up to 16, and we've done some preliminary calculations already, and I think we're going to be maybe, I think, in the double digits, maybe $11, $12. So it will be a benefit to them to look at doing that. And we also recognize that they have a they're providing a bit of a benefit to Mountain Regional for some lots in Stagecoach, about 15 lots that we're, they're providing some storage for fire flow. So we also mentioned that, that we would want to take that benefit that they're providing into consideration. We didn't get into a, you know, strict methodology on what that would be, but they recognized that, you know, some kind of discount would be appreciated. We also talked about defining in that agreement a number of acre feet that would be provided so that we aren't getting into a situation where customers are now connected to Mountain Regional and feel like that there could be some outdoor water use going on or such. Now that they felt a little bit more stable, we did definitely want to keep this out indoor use only. This will not be for outdoor irrigation at all. Agreed with that. Their homeowners are used to that. They don't want to change, you know, that dynamic. So it would be out indoor only. We generally talked about a 50 to 60 acre foot agreement initially based on where they are in their build out and their current usage. And then over that 5-year period, we could ramp that up in an amount that both parties agreed on. So I think those were the basic decisions that we came to. We left it kind of a little bit in Dave Thomas and Ted Barnes' hands to help draft that agreement for us. Eric was going to take it back to his board and make sure that they're comfortable with the decision. There's one other point that I want to make. We did talk about within that agreement also having basically a 1-year trigger, so that when we triggered to decide whether or not we were going to move forward with the annexation. So if we made it a 5-year term, in that 4th year, we would determine, yes, we're going to move forward with the annexation, and here's the timeline, or no, we're not going to move forward with the annexation, and we're maybe going to look at a continued wholesale rate. I did initially check with Weber Basin to see, get their temperature on doing this wholesale rate outside of the Snyderville Basin area because of the amount of it, of the acre feet that we're looking at. Even at build out, we don't think this is going to be more than 100 acre feet of water. It's a pretty small amount. They didn't have any initial concerns, but of course wanted us to keep them in the loop if we were to decide anything permanently, so, or temporarily. So that's where we are on Pine Meadows. Any questions or anything else you want to add, Mike or Karen?
No, you really covered all of it. So
that's a nice summary. I've got my notes here. I'm kind of looking back. Yeah, I'm about 1625, and we talked about, you know, maybe a 5-year. We're going to work on the rate. Go outdoor. It's got a cap. The 1 year prior, maybe an operating agreement.
And I have not heard back from them since our meeting.
Right. They were going to meet on Thursday the 10th. But I think that was the next step.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anything yet. But where I think the next step would be for us to put those things that we talked about in an agreement that Dave Thomas and Ted Barnes would draft up, and then we would bring it to the board for their recommendation approval. One other point, the engineering evaluation is moving forward. We got that approved at the January 26th board meeting. Sam and I had a kickoff meeting with Bowen and Collins yesterday, and they're already starting to dive in and look at the models and ask questions, and like they've already, you know, kind of started to wrap their arms around this. So we provided information that we could. We have a few action items to do from the district side, and then a few things that I'll coordinate with Eric on getting that Bowen and Collins would like additionally, but they're moving forward. So we anticipate meeting with them maybe every other week or so and just kind of checking in and seeing how they're progressing. But that's going to be a six-month engineering evaluation process, so we won't see anything until midsummer. But now that we've kind of decided this interim temporary agreement might be the way to go, I think it's given us a little bit of breathing room, so we can make decisions in a pace that works for all the entities.
Yeah, do you think we should follow up with them and ask them how it went on Thursday to see if it gave them those assurances that they need so they could maintain their staff?
Yep, I can follow up with him. I was thinking about that, and I think Brody called me maybe a day or two after just to ask kind of questions related to timing, but I have not heard anything since. So I'll follow up with Eric and see how his board meeting went.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, sure. I wanted to talk about our monthly meeting location. Is everybody feeling like they want to go back to the sewer district location, back to meeting in person? Do you want to continue hybrid or virtual? What are your thoughts?
I'd like to get back to in person, and I thought the sewer district was fine, but I'm not particular where we meet.
Yeah, I agree. In person would be nice, and I'm happy doing it anywhere.
In person?
Ditto.
Okay. Do we want to kind of limit the numbers like we had in the past with having some staff online still, or do you feel comfortable enough to have, say, myself and Steve, Anna there to do minutes, and probably Chris, maybe Sam, or do you still want to do a hybrid version with staff?
I'd rather have them there in person, but if it's, they don't have a really big role in the meeting, they could zoom in.
Okay.
What else did everybody else think?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. Were people staying remote because there's still a concern about the spread of COVID?
I think we, at the December meeting, we kind of talked about still doing some things hybrid with not all the staff there. But I think if we just have staff who have a larger lift on the agenda, let's say, and then if the others that don't could certainly, Brian probably doesn't need to always, be in person. He could be online listening.
That sounds good.
Okay. Great.
Joel, you okay with that?
Then the one agenda item that we added along with the Calgon Carbon PO was a drought discussion. I wanted to pull up a few slides here. Chris, can I share my screen?
Yeah, I guess the background for the rest of the board, I asked Lisa to add this. It feels like it's new territory for us. We haven't really ever had to implement it. And, I had questions about just how the mechanics of it, who's our point person and how do we, it seems like there might be a need for a common message across the county between the water districts or the water providers. Sort of the implementation of, how do we use this was thought worth, starting to talk about.
Yep, and I can just go through a few things that I've been doing to try to help monitor our situation, and then we can, our drought response plan that we adopted last year, we can bring that up and kind of focus on some of the trigger points that we'll be looking at. And then Steve, I was going to have a walk through some financial implications to those trigger points.
Well, and And you also want- what Weber Basin was doing, had they, were we getting
yes.
what to anticipate from them?
Yep, and I talked to Darren Hess. I emailed with him and then talked to him this morning. So
awesome.
I'll go through a couple slides and then we'll get into that. I am attending, there's a drought webinar every 2 weeks that's put on by the Utah Department of Agriculture, the Utah Climate, I can't remember the last, Climate Center, Utah Climate Center here, and then Division of Water Resources. So they gave you a little update on how things are looking. I thought these a couple interesting slides here that what we already kind of anecdotally know, we're the long-term drought remains present. And the weather pattern we've been seeing for the last 7 weeks on little to no precipitation is becoming problematic. This is a quick February to April outlook. This is from NOAA. Really, if you see where we are, we're kind of at equal chances. Can kind of go either way here with seasonal temperature outlook and precipitation. When I talked to Darren today, he said he's not really seeing anything for February. I know we have a little storm that's coming on Monday, Tuesday, so maybe we'll get something out of there, but we really need it to snow. We need it to snow in March in order to really help that snowpack. This is a really interesting curve that I'm not sure if anyone's seen it. The snowpack curve, the black line there in the middle is this year. So it's just flatlined since January 1st, which, you know, it's becoming almost to the point where our snowpack is worse than it was last year if we don't get more snow. And last year was, you know, more of an average year, but we had those soil moisture levels that were so low that became very problematic. The saving grace this year is that our soil moisture levels are still good. So, but we really need to get some more snowpack in there to make a difference because our reservoirs are lower than they were last year. So let me bring up our drought response plan. And like I mentioned, I did, in order, in doing that biweekly webinar, I did reach out to Darren Hess and have a conversation with him. We are, at this point, Weber Basin is still on track to make that decision, which we note in our plan of in March, is when they make the determination on the final determination on what level they're going to be in and restrictions that might go into place, and that's based on storage levels. So, but he is, you know, not having made that decision yet or presenting to their board. It's looking like there will be significant outdoor restrictions this year. He's not anticipating indoor restrictions at this point, but that's still to be determined. So, because of the storage levels where they are, because of the snowpack where it is, and the long-range forecast with, you know, not the pattern not generally changing significantly, which we could have, it could dump. I mean, the December snow, I'm not sure is, you know, what they anticipated either, so we could have another big event that would change that. But we are looking at restrictions. So let me take you through a few of these slides here on what Mountain Regional does. So here's the Weber Basin drought monitoring process. You'll see there in March is where they consider the demand reductions based on the forecasted June 1st conditions. And then they generally get those restrictions to their customer agencies on water supply contracts in April. They're still following that, so no definite answer yet, but we definitely think there will be restrictions coming. What that means for Mountain Regional, this is the demand reduction targets at Weber Basin. So last year we were kind of in that three. It wasn't mandated, but Weber Basin was asking for a 20% cut. I think this year we're looking at a drought level probably in a 4 or 5. So we're looking at 60% reduction in M&I water, outdoor irrigation, or potentially 95. Like Darren said, these do have indoor cuts potentially, but we're not sure about that. He's not sure about that yet. So based on the level that Weber Basin decides, that triggers Mountain Regional's plan. So we follow largely the same triggers that they would. If we get into a severe or an extreme event, we're going to ask for 60% reduction on outdoor watering, extreme being 95%. That indoor demand, our triggers currently say 10% indoor and 25% outdoor. Now, if we get into those, on our April timeline, that's when we had an agenda item to go over with the board, the Weber Basin's decision. I'll obviously be hoping to know before the April board meeting what direction they're heading in so that we can start making some adjustments. And I'll walk through some of those things that we've initially indicated in our drought response plan of action items that we're going to have to start tackling if we're talking about a level 4 or level 5 reduction.
Hey, Lisa.
Yes.
So back to Weber Basin in March, they just kind of give us a heads up of how mm-hmm. they see where it's going so that we can, you know, start to prepare.
Yep.
April, where they give notice, I guess.
Yeah, that's how they have it laid out in their current timeline.
It's official.
I think the end of March. I don't have the specific date of their board meeting, but Darren said the end of March is when they decide, and that will take into account the snowpack levels. They're seeing the soil moisture levels, storage, runoff, so they can get a better indication of what those restrictions might be.
And that's in March. It's just an idea, but then April is when it's official and they really cut us back.
Well, I think we'll have that, you know, we're not really irrigating outside in April yet, so we'll have to look to them for when that determination starts. I'm not sure. In our drought response plan, we've indicated that if we were to do, say we were to change our rates for outdoor irrigation or to institute a drought surcharge, those would all start with the May usage, which is where our customers typically start irrigating outdoors. So that would be the June 1st bill.
So, Lisa, do we have a rough idea and a model on the difference between severe and extreme with regards to revenue stream and expenses?
Yep, I was just getting that here at the bottom, and I'll have Steve talk about that. So let's just go to level 4 and level 5, because I think that's probably where we need to spend, and we're not making any decisions right now. We're just reviewing, you know, what our drought response plan tells us and what those numbers look like. So if we are headed into, I'm sorry, that's level 3. If we get into a level 4 scenario, which is the 60% outdoor, 10% indoor, we talked about contracting to carry out a major publicity campaign, like Mike also mentioned, that might be coordinating with Park City, coordinating with Summit Water, so that we can really get a message out that is consistent because if different water agencies have different messaging, then it gets confusing and we don't get the result that we need. So we need to make sure that we're all on the same page. And we need to have a regular media presence. One thing I will also mention, this isn't affecting every region in Utah the same. The Weber River is a little bit in not as good a shape as, say, Central Valley. So this could be, you know, a little bit more region by region who's feeling the effects of this year, where the snowpack is and where the storage levels are a little bit more than others. We're just going to have to see how the next month plays out. We will continue to promote whatever we can do to do indoor reduction strategies, even though maybe we're just getting cut outdoor. I think we still need to push indoor. We would also the district would get into more of an enforcement mode if we're starting to reduce people and monitor watering activity. That's going to be a big lift on the customer service side. Our operations folks who are going to need to be out, you know, seeing who's not heeding the restrictions that are in place. This level four does introduce a drought surcharge that Steve will walk you through. We will need to hold public meetings and to order to get those rates adopted. We've already established preliminarily in this report what we think those rates will be, but we would have to go through a public process to have those rates adopted, which I would anticipate would happen in the April or May timeframe after we hear from Weber Basin what we're facing. Again, widespread communication with stakeholders. We'll be doing door-to-door communication and potentially hiring additional staff if we need to help with the enforcement effort. Customer actions, we'd ask for limited irrigation. We have some water-efficient landscaping tools we could help people with, and we're talking maybe only irrigating once a week and hand watering only as needed. Level five basically builds on level four. We're in a kind of crisis mode by then if we're not watering outside. This would be limited hand watering only and limited to your major trees. No turf irrigation at all. We would also talk about accelerating the escalation of penalties for noncompliance. Right now, our methodology or our current system for penalizing people who are, they have water running during the day or outside of our watering hours. We ask for a warning, then it's a $100 penalty, and then maybe a $150 penalty. That would definitely need to be ramped up to a level that we think would get people's attention and that would stop any of the outdoor watering that could be happening. So that would also be part of this public process that we go through in adopting these rates. We'd adopt some kind of penalties for any outdoor irrigating that would be going on. There would obviously be lots of press. We'd have to do lots of, again, communicating with our other local agencies and as much human-to-human contact as we can to get that message out. Steve, do you want to go through what some of those drought surcharges look like?
Yeah. Do you want to just keep your screen up, please, or do you want?
I'll go down to page 15 here.
Probably that page.
This one,
right?
Okay.
This one would be good. And in fact, scroll down just a little bit more. So, when we put this together last year, we did the financial modeling on that. We did it based on 2020 water sales, which, as you may recall, was a very high usage year, almost $4.6 million in usage revenue alone. If we had, then we did what that financially would impact if we did a level 3 drought level, a level 4, or a level 5. So, for example, under 2020 water sales, level 4 would have about a $2.3 million impact to the district in revenue shortfall or decreased revenue. What we'd planned at that level is to have some expense. All of the levels have some form of expense reduction. Some of that happens naturally because of power savings, some because of, less treatment plant chemicals, fewer repairs because we're not pushing so much water through the system, and then some drought surcharges and drought reserves. These numbers based on, so for the 2022 budget, we've really only budgeted about $4.1 million in revenue from usage. So on an order of magnitude, these numbers are higher than what we would be dealing with in 2022 because we, our budget isn't dependent on the type of usage we had in 2020. So Tim, kind of to your question, that first column, the 765,000 and the 2.3 then the 3.6, that was the potential financial impact if we go through these different levels. A 95% decrease to outdoor watering is pretty significant. We make a lot of money off of outdoor watering, off that those usage. But we do have this plan to put it back of how we would cover that. So as we talked about, the 800,000 we put in a drought reserve. So let's say we ended up with a $2.5 million revenue we need to make up. We've got 800,000 in the drought reserves. Our budget, we have about a cushion of about 1.4. We budgeted about a 1.67 debt ratio. We have to hit 1.25. So we've got about $1.4 million cushion there. So between the 800,000 and the cushion, we could almost cover it without and not drop below our bond covenant of 1.25. A nice thing is, even with transferring the 800,000 out, we still have about $2 million, a little over $2 million, in our regionalization reserve. So at least for 2022, we're in good position to handle this because of the little bit of cushion we built into our budget, the reserve we built, and other reserves that we can tap into with your authorization, those regionalization reserves to help cover any shortfall. Coming out of this could be interesting, though we may have to go through several strategies. If this ends up being a drought year, it probably puts us further behind, so we'll need multiple years of good snowpack. We'll probably be dealing with a drought restriction in 2023 as well, if we deal with one in 2022. Unlikely just a snowpack next winter would solve the problem. Does that, Tim, does that kind of help make sense of what we've modeled the financial impact to be?
Well, it does. It's just there's a couple of assumptions you have to go with, and that is that customers won't be willing to pay the higher prices or the penalty, and they'll stop using water.
Yeah. Yeah, because if we – the building back – you assume that they will behave or not use that outdoor water, and then that cuts your revenue quite significantly, so then you have to add it back into the lower tiers and into base. Probably the next page, Lisa, will be the good one to talk about. So what we did is we came through, and to build back this revenue we'd be missing, these are the rates that the modeled out. So for example, that let's go drought 60, outdoor reduction, and 10% indoor reduction. What we do is keep that first 5,000 gallons at the same rate. That's really just living water. You know, you've got to have at least that much just indoor. We start to see a little increase in that 5 to 20,000 gallons from 464 to 480. A little more on each level, and you see down at the very, if somebody's ignoring I shouldn't use the word mandate, but the request to drop their outdoor usage, instead of paying $21.63 per 1,000 gallons, they'd be paying $75 per gallon, per 1,000 gallons. In addition to that, we would add a $3.15 charge to the base. That's about a 5% increase to the base. as a drought surcharge. Not permanent, but at this point, but that would help also offset some of that. If we get to the 95% outdoor watering have to be cut, you'll see those rates ramp up quite a bit more quickly to $7 at the second tier, you know, $25 by the tier four. Basically, our modeling, nobody should have to use water beyond even tier two or tier three indoor. Anything above that is really outdoor watering. So the kind of that highlighted section in yellow is where we really have to start to be punitive and make back some of this revenue if somebody's going to ignore what they're being asked to do. The surcharge jumps to $13.50. That's just a reality of everybody's got to pay a little more in their base to make up the revenue. We'll be cutting expenses. We'll be delaying some repairs that we can, you know, and just delaying some capital projects that we can to help get us through this as well. But so just a little bit of insight on how this changes somebody's particular bill. So if you're an outdoor water who are used to using 40,000 gallons in a summer month, your current bill is basically $275. Under the 95% outdoor, your bill would be about $562. Your bill doubles if you use 40,000 gallons. Now, if you're only using 5,000 gallons, your bill goes from about $70 a month to about $83 a month, so about a 20% increase. But 40,000, you'd be talking 100% increase or doubling your bill. If somebody is really still watering like it was a historical year, let's say they're using 100,000 gallons, so they're used to paying a $1,200 bill a month for their water, that bill would jump to almost $3,600. And so it really it escalates the punitive nature of these. Unfortunately, we don't project that we'd have many people paying that kind of water bill, because if they are, we're going out as soon as we see that usage on a day-to-day basis and telling them, you got to stop doing it. And that's where we have to put a lot more into the base. I'm really glad we did this prep work last year and a lot of this financial modeling so that we're in a position to kind of look at this, you know, a second time even, and update through the numbers. I have been doing some updating on the numbers based on budget and 2022 projections. And like I said, the order of magnitude wouldn't be as big. If this said we'd have to come up with 2.3, we'd maybe only have to come up with 1.9 or 2. Because we're just not as reliant on usage revenue in our budget for 2022. But this is, for example, this would be, we'd work these numbers, but this would be something we'd come back with to request your approval. If Weber Basin makes a reduction to us, this is what we need to do to be fiscally responsible as a company.
It'll be real interesting to see in these different years how people actually respond, because I think I've driven by no fewer than 50 houses this summer that look like they've got $150,000 of landscaping in, right?
Yeah.
And if they're paying $3,300 a month for just 3 months out of the summer or whatever to make sure they're protecting that landscaping investment that they've made, it'd be interesting to see how that shakes out.
I hear you, Tim. I this is Joel, when you were talking about the magic eight ball, well, I guess I brought up the magic eight ball. We've never been through this, so how do we know how they're going to respond? You know, at what point is the pressure point for people saying, okay, I can't do that anymore, or I'm going to still pay it because, like you said, Tim, I've got $150,000 poured into this landscaping. I don't care what they charge me, quote unquote, and I'm going to keep watering it. I think we saw a really nice response, I thought, from our customers last summer. This could, watching this play out through a whole summer of more severe restrictions, we might make a lot of money off our increased conservation rates, but if we actually deliver that water, it could kill our sources, kill our wells, really hurt that. So it's weird. We have incentive to get out and stop people from watering, which means less money, but we also have methods where, hey, if you use too much, you're going to help pay for the damage you're causing to our water system.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I think, Lisa, that's about what you wanted me to cover, correct, tonight?
Yep. Thanks, Steve. That was it. I think, like Steve said, I'm glad we went through this exercise last year and that we've already put some numbers to it so we know what we could potentially be facing. I think it's all manageable. We just looked at our cash position. We're adequately reserved in many areas. And if we, we already established a drought reserve. I think that was very forward thinking. We've already got money in there. We have our regionalization reserve that could also be used. And we have repair maintenance reserves if we get into a situation where we're trying to, we have a repair that needs to get done. We have the ability to do that. So in that sense, I think financially we're adequately in a good spot. I think we are in uncharted territory with how our customers are going to react. I don't know what to expect. This is a back-to-back year like this is, once in 100 years. It doesn't happen very often, but this may be what we're facing now more regularly. So we need to, start to pay particular attention to what Weber Basin does in the next month and a half. And like I was talking to Steve about earlier today, we're also going through a rate model review of our watering rates this year. And I think depending on what happens, we need to really take a good hard look at how we're splitting our base versus our usage rate, our tiered rate. There may need to be more of a base number there if we're getting a lot of unpredictable usage patterns. If it's, we get a big snow and then we have no snow, so we may need to get a little bit more of a consistency in our revenue and do that with a little bit higher base, and also maybe be a little bit more punitive, but if you're going to use the water, it might be a little bit more expensive. We're going to jump up a little quicker than $1.80 to $4.64. It might ramp up a little quicker. But we are going through that rate model. We plan to do that with Zions Bank this year, and I think it's a great time to do it after we see how this summer shakes out. I know it's a lot of information, and I'm sorry. I'm glad you brought it up because it really got us thinking about it again, and we've had a lot of things thrown at us in the last couple of weeks, and now we're going to be heading into some more things. So this general manager is going to have their hands full, I'll tell them that. So, but we can handle it. I think we're in a great position. So I think we just kind of need to see how the snowpack goes, see how the melt happens, and how the reservoir levels are looking in to Weber Basin for that direction.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah, I do think we're in this uncharted area, and I think so. Just kind of my sense of this is that I think we've got a good tool here, but it's gonna, we've never used it, and there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, and I don't know if you've thought about an implementation plan who's gonna do what. I can see that in our future, and then maybe communicating to the county council of, I don't know if they're familiar with our plan. And
the drought response plan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what could be coming, and really to get them on board, because they could maybe help with the coordination with the other water companies.
Yeah, I think there'll definitely be a lot of coordination
They're going to have a dog in the fight when people, if things come to this, you know, yeah. they're going to.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. Any other questions, comments?
No.
Okay. I didn't heard from Dave tonight. Is he on the phone? Do we have any legal updates for item 7 or 8?
He is not on tonight.
Okay. We'll move on to 9 and the department updates. Let's just go around. Joel, did you have any questions there?
No questions whatsoever at this point. Actually, the only one question that I have is, and this is directed to Lisa and Steve, I would really like an update next month from you guys regarding the drought discussion. Just, I'm not lecturing, I'm not preaching to the choir, but I would just like an update. I think a lot can happen in a month.
For sure. Yeah, we will. I'm continuing to sit on these webinars every 2 weeks, and I'll give you the latest information that I have at the market meeting.
Thank you.
Sure.
Tim, any questions on the department updates?
Yeah, I had one, I like the picture of the pond that Brian put in there. And I had a question for Chris, and it had to do with, I don't have your report in front of me, but it had to do with, I think a Talisker organization wanted to annex something from us. What was that about?
They're wanting to annex some parcels down in the lowers.
Is it TCFC?
Correct, yeah. Some parcels that they own.
TCFC is over at Canyons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. Oh, are you going to go, Chris?
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I thought I was unmuted. That the parcels are TCFC parcels scattered around the lower part of the canyons. We're not at a point where we really want to discuss this yet with the board entirely, but that's they're pursuing trying to annex into the district to get some irrigation water for some parcels around the entry on Canyons Resort Drive. That's the short version of it.
Okay. I just didn't understand exactly where. If that's all it is, then we'll just wait for more details there.
Yeah, probably next month.
Okay. That's it for questions on the reports.
Thank you. Karen, any questions?
No, I just said Chris's report, that was great news on the treatment plant generators. And on Sam's report, I assume we are going to request a presentation of the treatment plant design alternative. Something in his report, I don't know, a couple days ago. And then, Lisa, I keep missing the newsletter, so I don't know if I'm just opening my bill and, you know, throwing it away along with the envelope, but could you send me a copy of the newsletter?
Oh, sure, of course. I'll send it over.
Okay.
It is also available on the website.
Oh, it is. Okay, well then I'll go look for it on the website.
Oh.
Okay, that's it for me.
Well, there's no other questions on the department updates. I think we're ready for item 10 to adjourn here at 8:21. Is there anything else?
Nope. I don't have anything.
Okay. Well, I thank the staff and everybody's hard work here. And we'll be adjourned at 8:21.